We all have stories from our childhoods. What is your favorite story or memory from your days in school?
Days in school was with my grandfather's Carr Stevens and Minnie Stevens. Back in those days, we really didn't have babysitters and stuff like that. And I lived in Cordova with my mom and dad, but I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and she lived out by the lake, and she would tell me the story of the Kushtika, the man that lives up in the hill that watches over, and basically if you be bad or you get too far away from grandma's house, he'll swoop down and pick you up and bring you back up into the mountains and basically eat you. So that kept me pretty close to grandma's house when I was a young man. So I told that story to my grandkids, and they actually had me go over to the Valdi school here and repeat that story. My grandson wanted to share it with the rest of them. So I had the little drawings of what I saw was the old man up in the hill, a bird man. And to really add to that story, my son-in-law was actually down in Ketchikan, and he was going to go out hunting when he was working on the road to the island, the airport. And the elders over there told him to watch out for the Kushtika too, and it kind of scared him quite a bit. That story must be true if they tell us,
Yeah, it definitely makes you wonder.
Yeah, it does. So, and that's one of the stories I tell. And then the other one is how the bobcat lost his tail. Old stories of, when you're wasteful and selfish, you lose some of your rights and privileges. And that's what I remember.
What else do you remember learning from your parents or community that you were not taught in school?
Basically, the right to take care of the elders and to share your first catch, and things that I have passed on to my sons and my daughters that, when you harvest your first animal or you catch your first fish, that is your giveaway. You got to find some elders to share it with. So that's something I never really learned in school. Everything I ever really learned in school is me, 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 me. But when I learned from grandma and grandpa and from mom that, when you go out and harvest your first animal, you're supposed to distribute it to the elders and to the needy.
That's wonderful. What did you like about going to school when you were a child?
What did I like about like elementary and junior high and everything else?
Yes.
Well, I didn't like the square dancing that they made us do in EAC Elementary. I don't really remember much of it just being together, but as I got up later into junior high and to high school in Anchorage, was being able to work in the auto shop and actually work with my hands more than just book learning. So I found I'm a more of a hands-on type of learner than, I can read it in a book, but I actually have to put my hands on it and touch it before it really sinks into my memories.
So did you go to elementary school in Cordova, did you say, and then junior and high school in Anchorage?
I did EAC Elementary in Cordova, and then I think in 65 we were taken away from our parents, and I was sent up to Anchorage to foster homes, and I went to Yanaka Valley Elementary School, and then Clark Junior High, and then both east and west. So,
how was that?
One thing we had at Yanaka Valley that I liked was they actually had outdoor sports where you were on the ice rink, hockey and speed skating and things like that. And artwork. I loved the art classes in the junior high and stuff like that. So,
how was that experience for you leaving Cordova?
It was pretty dramatic because I went from a native close community where you could run the streets and you could. Back then, Cordova was our whole playground. Got up to Anchorage and. Basically, as a foster child, they put us into, mine wasn't very great because you were put into military people that just needed extra money. So they weren't there because the love of the children. They were there for the extra money, and that's what you were to them. That's why I think today it's really nice that they take a native child from a native village that the village or the native people should have first preferences, because I was thrown into a whole different culture shock.
Definitely. What do you remember disliking about your school experience, whether that was in Cordova or in your schools in Anchorage?
To me, like I said, I didn't really like doing the square dancing and everything else that was an activity in Cordova Elementary. Plus, being in a crowd with the Christmas programs and stuff like that, when you're expected to learn something that really wasn't something that you really wanted. And as I got up into junior high and high school, the dislikes was being boxed into a building and not learning on the outside, you know. When my kids got older, the principal used to get mad at me because I'd take them out for moose camp. And I would tell them that, you know, the school education is fine. It's good to know about the Civil War, it's good to know about Christopher Columbus, but what we don't have is Alaska Native history about how do we take care of our elders, how do we live off the land. And I told him, I said, I take my kids out moose hunting, so if the world goes to what it is getting today, at least they know how to feed their families, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more education than just books and learning. There's the whole outdoors, and that's, I guess that's what I disliked about being in Anchorage, because you were stuck in your house or stuck in a school. There was really no outdoor really learning of how to really take care of things that are important, how to gather the berries, how to gather the food, how to survive if the world went to Hades. And how to repair your own car, or how to even, I even took cooking classes in Clark Junior High of how to be able to, feed yourself, how to make things. So the lack of outdoor activity that needs to be brought into our schools and education. Alaska history.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Now that you live in, you're in Valdez now, correct?
Yeah, I retired into Valdez until I build the road to Cordova, then I'll go home and put my house up. So I think this is the end of the road for me, because I don't think that road to Cordova will ever happen.
Well, we'll see. It'll be interesting. What do you like about the schools in Valdez today?
A small town community where the kids know the teachers and know the deals inside and outside the classes. what I really like too is, you know, they do have wrestling where the kids learn to wrestle, but one of the shop teachers now is one of the kids that used to be in the wrestling. So the kids know their teacher and learn from hands-on from them. So, and just being able to, I mean, small school, the teachers know the kids. You're just not another pupil passing through like Anchorage was to me.
That's wonderful. And what concerns do you have about the schools in Valdez today?
Well, of course, COVID right now, of how safe it's going to be. And I believe the lack of Alaskan type history. I have one of my grandsons that wants to actually go back to school to be a history teacher. And I asked him, I says, well, what kind of history would you like to teach? And he said, well, all histories, but I'd really like to have Alaskan history because they never had that in the schools. Because when I tell them things about things that has happened in Alaska and everything else like that, he's really interested in to follow up, and he needs to, me, he seems to need to want to pass that knowledge on, not just about the Civil War, which is down in the lower 48, about Columbus hitting the East Coast and coming over. He wants to know about the Tlingits, the Haidas, the Tsimshians, and the Aleuts, and the Yupik, and all of the Alaskan history that has going on today. And I think a lot of that has to do with when I had my kids in school, there was really no NYO in Valdez. So we started it way back in the 90s before it was even accepted into the Valdez schools. And by learning the native games from the NYO, they also learned a lot about American history, Alaska history.
No. That's a fun way to learn Alaskan history too, by actually participating and doing the games.
Yeah, because not only do they teach them the games, they teach them what they meant, you know, just from the singling and how to hunt, excuse me, and what the games were used for, you know, and they were really surprised, like, wow. And the other thing is when we were doing it, we had, I would say, half Native kids and half non-Native kids that was wanting to know and be part of it. And so, you know, the feds will, the Johnson & Wiley program will not pay for non-Natives, but we would have pizza night, and we'd have gatherings, and we'd have, what do you call those things where you get donation money to help the non-Natives?
Fundraisers?
Huh?
Fundraisers?
Fundraisers, yes, to be able to help the, you know, get the uniforms for the kids and for pay for the travels and their foods to go up to Anchorage or to, you know, like Cordova would come over and practice with us and Glen Allen would come down and practice with us because we were not part of the big Anchorage school districts where it was accepted. But now, since we had... I think he's working for you guys. He was a principal down here in Valdez that actually got the NYO games brought into the school district. Because, I mean, when we were doing it, we would actually have to practice at the Eagles or have to practice after the basketball people. So we didn't have any clout to take over the gym to do it like they do now, where it's accepted into the school, so it's part of their program. But the Eagles would actually let us practice at their downstairs floor, you know, so we had to make our own equipment and everything else, which was natural. But having these kids pack it all in and, you know, put it up and do it at the basement of the Eagles it was pretty awesome. And then when we were able to get into elementary school, it was a little bit better because they even had mats that they could practice on. So,
wow. It sounds like it was a really community-driven initiative.
It was. It was something just to keep the, as you well know, the small communities up north, if it wasn't basketball, how much more the, with no idle, I mean, if there's idle hands and deals, more mischief kids can get into. So we used to have pizza night, movie night at our house. And even on Tuesdays and Thursdays back in the day, the NYO team, we would all grab all my 22s and we'd go up in the shooting range and they'd shoot a brick of 22s and practice firearm safety. And of course, doing the practice and then they would pack them all into the van and then we would go practice the NYO practice. So on Tuesday and Thursday, we also had gun safety and gun practice, which people like Larry over here at Hookline and Sinker would donate a brick of 22s to me. And the certified instructors would make sure that the kids had the gun safety. And the rest of us adults would just stand by and watch the kids and make sure everyone was being safe. So they were practicing their actually gun safety, firearm proficiencies, because some of them turned out to be hunters. And so it's a good place to start. And by doing that in a small community, it just kept them busy. Because, mm-hmm. you know, today you look at 99% of the kids and they're on video games. But that's how we did it back in the day when we were teaching our kids.
So I'm curious if you might be willing to talk about the school's participation in that. Did they initially not do anything and then eventually become more interested and supportive? Or what was that relationship like and how did it evolve?
They would let us practice when there was no basketball or volleyball practice into their deals. So when we were doing that, it was really not supported by the schools. But you're trying to remember his name. He's up there at Chugatsmuth.
Mark Karachka?
Yes, he was the principal. And when he became the principal of Valdez here, he actually got them to look at the NYO games as, what would you say, a sanctioned sport. So that's, you know, now it's accepted by the schools, but I think they also have non-native children into the games, but they also have fundraisers to support them for the travel and for the uniforms. Cause if you got a bunch of kids together, you can't give uniforms to some and not uniforms to the others, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not if you want a team.
Wow. Well, I did not know that about Mark, and I'm excited to share this interview with him. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, he was a really good supporter when he was here, and he still is. Don't get me wrong. He comes down, I think, once a year.
He has a lot of affection for Valdez. I know he talks about it a lot.
Yep. I took his spot to go to Germany to the museums to look at artifacts over there because he was working on another grant. So I was actually able to go to Berlin to see the artifacts that was collected by the Germans in the 1847s, somewhere in there, 43s. So we have a lot of our artifacts over in Germany that they want to repatriate type deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be nice if we could get some of those back in the Valdez Museum or here in Anchorage or Cordova, the Alanka Center. They've got a great collection.
We are working on that right now with the Monica in Germany and then Ellen Morris, which was part of your group too.
Nice.
So we're working that. We're working with the Valdez Native Tribe and the museum in Homer. And with Helen, and of course with the German group that has the museums that are wants to do a virtual and repatriate some of the stuff, because some of it got repatriated to Chugach, to mm-hmm. John Johnson, the mask and stuff from Chinny again, stuff like that. But there's still more stuff coming out, because when you check their history, the museums in East Berlin after World War II, Russia took a lot of that stuff back to Moscow, and now they're repatriating it back to East Berlin. And then East Berlin is actually looking to repatriate it or bring it back to the original people.
Oh, well, I wish you much success in that. That would be great if the objects can come back to their home.
Yes. But also knowing where they're at and teaching the next generation that, you know, I didn't even know. I mean, when I was over there, when I put on some of the garbs that shamans wore and stuff like that, it was just so amazing and so empowering that this is part of our ancestors, our histories. Because if you know anything about my mom and myself, mom was the last full-blooded fluent speaker and one of them that helped Michael Krauss preserve the Yak language. So when I was over there, you know, museums don't normally do this, let you put on the artifacts, you know, even John Johnson says, well, you know, they used to preserve it with arsenic and everything else like that. And I says, well, if our ancestors didn't want to protect us, they wouldn't let us put them on. But it's so empowering. I got so much pictures and stuff like that that I was over there. And at the VNT, we're going to make it a book and a slideshow of what was seen in East Berlin.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so glad you have photos of you wearing the artifacts, too.
Yeah, and then Swainy, too, I mean, from Chiniga, he put on some of the stuff from there, and it's just so powerful.
Mm.
Just even knowing that the stuff was even collected, I mean, that, you know, that's another thing, too, is if you don't know, you don't know. But once you've been introduced to the knowledge, now you have to do something with it. So I'm, because I asked Michael Krauss one day, I said, Michael, I says, what kind of artwork do the EX have? We know about the Tlingits and the Haidas and all their artwork down south, but what do the EX have? And he looked me straight in the eye and the straight face, and he says, you know, Bill, he says, whatever you do is EX. He says, in the 1933s and the 1800s, they collected some stuff. But that was just a snapshot in time. Whatever you draw, whatever you do is EAC art. So that really hit home to me, because I've been working a lot with the sea otters and trying to teach it to the kids. But one of the things that really bothered me about especially the sea otter working, the federal government is bleeding the native out of the Alaskan native, because if they put a blood quantum of 1/4, I can't take my grandkids out and teach them how to harvest the sea otter, how to the sea otter gets tanned, how to respectfully use the part of the sea otter that we need, and to make things out of it, gloves, hats, garments. But since they're less than 1/4, they cannot do that. But I tell my children, I says, if you have 1 drop of EAC blood in you, you are EAC. And that's something that we as tribes, we are the ones that need to stand up to the federal government and say, we dictate who our members are. The Cherokees have no blood quantum. The Eastern Cherokees have the 1/16. The rest of us go by what the BIA says to us, that you have to be 1/4 native to be a native. You know?
Yeah.
But to me, that is not correct.
Well, ideally, the federal government shouldn't be the one telling telling you who's a part of the tribe and who's not, that's not something that the federal government really should have any say in.
I agree with that 100%. I have a good friend, Kitke, from the USET, the United Southern Eastern Band Tribes, and he says it all the time. The federal government does not dictate to us. We dictate who our members are.
Yeah, that's just common sense.
Even in the old days, non-native Europeans were accepted into the tribes, and they were Sioux or Cheyenne or Choctaw if they were into the band. So,
well, that was really wonderful to document. Thank you for sharing all that. Switching gears back to the schools a little bit. What challenges do you see Native students facing in your community today?
Well, what I see is not being able to learn Alaskan history. All students spend more time on video games than they do on actual learning. And I guess maybe with this new Zoom and this new WebEx that the children have to go to school on, they might learn a little bit more of electronics. But I would like to see more trade in the school for our Native people, because not everybody needs to be a scientist. What the world needs is workers. And I do believe a lot of the Alaska Natives would learn, as I did, with hands-on versus trying to be an engineer, book learning, and theories. That's good to see, but I also believe that hands-on is one of the ways to go to that needs to be pushed more through the schools.
Do you have any other suggestions for improving education in Valdez?
No, just more hands-on and outside of the deals. And I do believe they lost their home ec deals. Is just learning how to cook, learning how to sew, learning how to clean. more real life stuff instead of American history.
Mm-hmm.
And English. I think more writing should come into effect. With our new technology, we simplify LOL, you know. It's a code versus actual words.
All right, thank you. And you've already, the next question was, is there anything you would like to see taught in school that is not currently being taught? But I think you covered that already. Was there anything else that you'd like to add before we move on to the last few questions?
No, I think we covered it all with, a little bit more life learning than book learning. It's okay to be book smart, but common sense and how to take care of yourself, especially if you don't got a job, how do you feed your family? How do you take care of yourself? How do you raise your kids? And I think there should be more classes too of, I know one of my grandkids was given an egg and he was told to take care of it for a week to make sure, just like taking care of a life. But they shouldn't be given babies that scream and holler and everything else, and how you got to take care of them for real life events too.
Hmm.
And artwork and Alaskan history, like I said before.
Yeah, and you're certainly not the first elder who has shared that with us. It seems to be something that comes up quite a bit, that Alaskan history is not being taught in school.
And history is history. I mean, a lot of times history upsets people. I mean, you see it today with the Civil War stuff going on. But if we don't understand the history, if we don't understand the seven generations that we had that we never learned from, how are we going to not repeat history?
Mm-hmm.
So history is good. I mean, everyone wants to ban the statues. Everyone wants to deal this. I mean, you know, history is history. You can't rewrite it, but you can understand it so we don't repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's not regress.
I hope your grandson does become a history teacher.
Well, he went to work as a laborer over across the bay, and he got fed up with that and of the politics. And he actually just went to work yesterday at the schools as a custodian so he can learn more about the schools. So I think it's actually pretty awesome.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Because he says, you know, the money was good as a laborer, but putting up with the politics and everything else over in big oil companies is not the same as doing what you really love to do. And he was upset that Alaskan history was never taught when he was going there. And what he has learned through the little things that I have been doing, a little bit of history about myself is I'm actually now the chairperson for the National Indian Health Board, and I work on a lot of veterans issues, and I deal in Washington, D.C. all the time on Zoom, and he sees me on my Zoom meetings and sees me going to Washington, D.C. to the National Indian Health Board to work on issues that affect Indian country. And I never thought I'd be doing that when I was growing up, but I see myself doing that. And then when I was able to go to East Berlin and learn about our artifacts over there, one of the things I told Monica and I told the people here, that I'm glad I went, but by going, I feel like now there's a split in the road where I need to take care of both paths, the Native path of our history and the veterans issues and the Alaska Native health issues and the National Indian Health Board issues. So as I retired, I find myself more and more working for our people. And this is where real life education comes in, that if you don't know what you don't know, you're happy. But when you're handed the knowledge, you have to do something with it. That's why I'm glad that hopefully my grandson will go back to school and study up to be a history teacher.
Yeah, and he would be able to pass that information down to the next generation and make sure that knowledge is passed.
Yep.
The next question we have is something that you've already addressed a little bit, but I want to ask it anyway in case there's something it makes you think of. Do you feel like your local school promotes the culture and history of the Sukbiak and Eyak people in the region?
No. even Tugatsmut. You know, Tugatsmut was having the big study on the Supik language, right?
Yes.
Well, they were in Cordova, and I was over for one of the meetings, and we were in Eyak land, and they had nothing about the Eyaks. Everything was on the Aleuts and the Supik and everything else, and I had to stand up and say something. And today there is something in their vocabulary from Tugatsmut on the Eyak people. You know, so they need to know more about what's going on here. Even Valdez. That Valdez is a melting pot because of that terminal over there. So we have every nationality, every, I think every corporation's people are in the Valdez Native Tribe. So we need to learn more about each other's cultures, each other's customs, each other's history. So yeah, it's much needed. And every time I stand up, and even when I was able to, I'm able now to introduce myself in my IAC language. I still really can't speak it too much, but Guillaume and the IAC corporation is working on it so we can start doing sentences. You know, we have all the words down. We have all the words preserved. Until you can communicate with another person in your native language, you are not done learning yet. And if you don't use it, you lose it. But the one thing I like about it is I have Surgeon Generals, I have the head of the Indian Health Service, now can say hello in IAC. So, and they know every time I speak, I say, the issue adukta a chief bill of the IACs. So they know that issue is hello. La issue is hello to all of you. And adukta a is that you or my name is. And they know that the IAC language is not completely dead. So to answer your question, we need more of all the languages and stuff being taught in our schools and our customs.
Thank you so much for sharing. And I'll definitely make sure, if you're okay with it, that what you shared about Chugach-Miut and the focus of our organization is passed along to people working on the language program.
Yeah, they know it because I go to the deals and they know me. they know I speak, and I do not disrespect the Supik language and the teachers that they have. What they have done is great, but if the grant is a grant for the seven villages, IAC is one of them that still needs to be spoken. Mm-hmm. Right along with the, you know, we used to call it the Aleuts, and then it was called Chugach Eskimos, and basically it's the Supik language, but there's also Tlingit and everything else in our area.
Yeah, it's very fascinating to me. I been in Alaska for over a year now, but it seems like the Chugach region is particularly diverse because of its geographic location.
It is. And, you know, it was the seven villages that created Chugach, you know, all the way from the Kukulent, from English Bay, to all over to Titlic, Chininga, IAC and Cordova, and now the Valdez Native Tribe.
Well, I think we're on to our last question, which is there anything else that you would like to share about education in your community?
Yes. We shouldn't wait to high school to be able to teach the history. The history should be taught, to me, from preschool all the way up. Let them be interested in it if they're interested in it. And let them be proud of their native heritage. So, because that's one thing that when I was taken away from Cordova, I was put into a southern hospitality, because all my foster parents were from the Deep South. So I lost out till I actually come back from the military.
Yeah, that must have been really severe culture shock.
Oh, it was. And that's why I'm really grateful now that they they seem, you know, when we have this, what is it called, childhood diversity or whatever they call it, that's where some of our, where it's good to keep the Native kids in the Native family if they have it.
ICWA?
Yeah, the ICWA.
Yeah.
And they never had that back in the 60s. Basically, it was just a place for military families to take care of and get extra money. So yeah, I see it now in Anchorage. They have some of the Native schools that some of the kids wanted their kids to go to. Just like the Spanish immersion classes and everything else that they have. They should be able to learn all about our histories. And that should be even open up to non-Natives so they can really understand our people. Still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Just didn't want to cut you off.
No, that's basically it. Just it'd be nice to see it going from preschool all the way to high school and then even into college. And, you know, everything from, you know, we have doctors and we have medical personnel. But we also have healers. There is some natural plantings out there that could work better for keeping our people healthy. But there's very few people that can teach that, I guess.
But it just makes documenting everything and saving it more important.
Yes. I just wish I had listened to my mom a little bit more when I was younger, just like everyone else. There are some plants that she was telling me about that grow alongside the road, the little white ones that used to pound them up and make them into a plaster and be able to put them on there for arthritis and everything else. And just trying to figure out which ones are which ones. So there's people like Pam Smith that in Cordova that people need to listen to a little bit more on the medicines and stuff that's out there. Because there are some natural medicines that sure beats this artificial medicine that they got. Pure medicine versus fillers.
I'm writing her name down, so I make sure we speak to her and get her perspective. On this project.
Yeah, she'll be a good one to do it. So she's also a cousin, but she's also a very interesting person to talk to. And she's really into genealogy. Her daughters are really into the history. So she would be a really good person to really talk to too.
Wonderful. Well, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Okay.
I'd like to be able to send you some documents in order to process the stipend. Is there a good email address that I can send those to?
Sure. You ready?
Ready.
I am, these are all lowercase, I am EYAK at ValdezAK.net.
I'm EAK.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And all the conversation about history, I just love, because Alaskan history, what brought me up to Alaska in the first place, I studied it in college and focused on it.
Well, that's cool. We didn't even know it was down there, in there. I mean, you hear all kinds of stories on history of Alaska, you know, just even how Alaska became the state, you know. if it wasn't for people wanting to stop all the fish traps that was killing all the salmon, we would not have salmon in Bristol Bay and Copper River today. If we had all the fish traps and everything else. But, you know, back in 1958, people got fed up with the capital of Alaska being Seattle and them taking all our seafood. And we would not have the fish that we have today. The natural runs. I mean, the history of the hatcheries is a different story. But the Bristol Bay natural runs, the Copper River natural runs, those need to be preserved.
No, it's amazing how much history isn't even documented yet. Like, I studied the magistrate system. And there was an entire generation of Native Alaska Native magistrates who challenged the court system and really promoted and advocated for village and traditional conflict resolution methods, and made quite a difference in their communities.
You still there?
Yep, still here.
Yeah, well, it's even played out today with the American Indians and even a couple of Alaska Native villages that actually put the kiboshes to the COVID-19 funding to come to the Alaska corporations. They do not know that the consortium and everything else takes care of the health care for Alaska Native people. You know, they see reservations. Alaska never had reservations except for Metlakatla. The rest of the corporations are the ones that are taking care of the health care of the American of Alaska Natives. And by them challenging it in the courts, it is, even though it's documented that those corporations are the same as the lower 48 reservations when it comes to taking care of our Native people. So, by them blocking it and going to court and has to go to being challenged now, that even though the court says the corporations have the right because it's written into the policies and everything else, that the Alaska corporations are the same as the reservations. And I think that was back in the 60s or 70s. That still some of the big Native corporations on Lower 48, since they're casinos were not authorized to get the money. They didn't want the corporations to get the COVID money. But we are a different entity. We don't have casinos in Alaska, but we do have corporations and consortiums to take care of the health of our Alaska Native people. So education is needed, and you know, that's what the National Health Board does a lot of times when people are re-elected to D.C. on the Hill, is educate them on Alaska Natives and American history, history of our health care.
It just really keeps coming back to education.
It does. Yeah. I mean, it's just really surprising how, I don't want to say they're ignorant, but if they don't have an interest and don't know, they will just keep taking chunks of Alaska that belong to other people. But just like Russia sold Alaska. Russia never owned nothing but a few ports along the coast. They never owned Alaska. The people of Alaska owned Alaska. So, but the United States thought it was good for 7 cents to buy it from the Russians and say, oh, now we own all of Alaska. We weren't owned when they bought us.
No, not at all.
But there are treaty obligations. We are sovereign nations, so there are tribal obligations that need to be done by doing the land exchange. Just like them taking all our oil from up north, that is part of the treaty obligations, and that's where our health care will come from for Alaska people. All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Bill. And I'll follow up via email today. Sometimes people don't receive my emails. So if you don't receive anything from me today, please feel free to give me a call back and I can try sending it from a different email address.
All right.
Thank you so much.